Welcome to today's reading of Sports Today, a one-hour reading of sports news from 7 to 8 p.m. every Tuesday and Thursday. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Let's begin today's reading with a headline that reads, Rory McIlroy wins the Masters and career Grand Slam in the most McIlroy of ways, dramatically. Over five stomach-churning hours, golf fans rode the wave with Rory McIlroy, who finally won the green jacket in the most dramatic Masters ever played. And this feature written by Dan Wolkin of USA Today. Dateline, Augusta, Georgia. At some point, generations from now, after all of us are long gone, they will look back at the records and the numbers and the championships under Rory McIlroy's name and think that all of it was inevitable, that one of the great players in the history of golf simply did what he was always destined to do. But sports doesn't work that way. Life doesn't work that way. So let it be said here and for posterity that the story of how McIlroy won the 89th Masters on Sunday, becoming the sixth player to complete the career Grand Slam, was an 11-year journey of doubts and disappointments, of resilience and reckoning, of vexation before validation. Anyone who says that this was preordained for one of the most talented golfers to ever pick up a club was not there as Masters after Masters passed, as the carefree kid grew into his mid-30s, as each gutting loss fed the cycle of cynicism and time started to seem a little more precious, as it tends to do for an athlete who wanted something so badly. I have been carrying that burden since 2014, McIlroy said, referring to the year that he won the Open Championship to get 3/4 of the way there. Thankfully, now I don't have to carry it, unquote. Goodness, even the idea that this was all going to end Sunday at dusk with McIlroy on the 18th green at Augusta National, flipping the putter over the back of his head, dropping to his knees and elbows on the ground in an uncontrollable heaving sob, mouth agape, screaming to the sky, seemed unlikely, then certain, then unlikely, then certain again to who the hell knows within the span of five stomach-churning hours. When McIlroy double-bogeyed the first hole, briefly coughing up the lead to Bryson DeChambeau as they walked to the third tee, a sense of dread crept into the massive galleries that the worst might be happening again. And then, at the very moment that it seemed like McIlroy had the tournament sewn up, the worst did happen at number 13 when he made one of the most inexplicable double bogeys in nearly a century of golf here, sparking a sequence of holes and shots so improbable that we can safely call this the most dramatic Masters ever played. Just a complete roller coaster of emotions, McIlroy said. And perhaps more than that, the notion that there was always going to be a Masters out there for McIlroy to finish the Grand Slam sells short something about him far more interesting than his gift to hit a golf ball. Of anyone who has ever achieved immortal things in sport, McIlroy is inescapably human. He feels, he emotes, he shares, he thinks, perhaps to his detriment. And he has taken all the fans of this game on a journey that shows us, perhaps more than any other athlete of his caliber, just how vulnerable, fragile and, yes, how mentally tough he can be. Quote, you've had Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Tom Watson, Tiger Woods, you name it, come here and all say I'll win the Masters one day, he said. That's a hard load to carry. These are idols of mine, and it's very flattering that they all came up here and believe in me and my abilities to win this tournament and achieve the Grand Slam and all that. But it doesn't help, unquote. We cannot rob McIlroy of what that journey has been like, because seeing every dimension of his genius and his fallibility careening across Augusta National on Sunday until he finally delivered the wedge and the putt that beat Justin Rose in an improbable playoff is what his appeal is really all about. For all the millions of dollars, the four major championships he won as a young man, the adoration across the globe, McIlroy made it such that you never knew if this day would come until he knew. And you only needed to take one look at him walking off the 18th green, the tension on his face replaced by relief, to understand that he didn't know either. This could only happen one way. We had to get the full Rory. Frustrating, daring, exhilarating, exhausting, and ultimately spellbinding. We were sort of part of history today, Rose said. Someone won the career Grand Slam. It's a momentous day in the game of golf, and quite rightly, fans are going to be excited about that. He's captivating to watch. He's a great player. He plays with so much style and charisma. And you never quite know as well, because he's made a few mistakes under pressure and fans want to keep watching and keep guessing, unquote. Thankfully, they don't need to guess anymore. Because as many times as McIlroy has left a major in the past decade wondering what if over one bad driver swing, one nervous putt, one horrendous decision when it's all on the line, it's hard to know how the scar tissue truly affects a man when he finds himself back in that position. In the past, McIlroy has put up various defense mechanisms to justify to himself what was happening to his career and his reputation in major championships. He either didn't care or he cared too much, and it was always a zig or a zag towards whatever seemed convenient. This year, McIlroy's mantra was that he had to be willing to get his heart broken to finally break through and achieve the thing that he wanted the most. But as the final round played out on Sunday, the idea that he could have his heart broken this time and keep coming back for more seemed a Hogan bridge too far. I certainly did not make it easy, he said. I was nervous. It was one of the toughest days I've ever had on a golf course, unquote. After his terrible start, he regained his footing and the lead on hole number 3, the short par 4, when he rolled in a birdie and DeChambeau 3-putted for bogey. Then, after walking off hole number 10 with a birdie, the hole where McIlroy lost it all with a triple bogey in 2011, nobody was within 5 shots. The tournament seemed to be over. But it was never going to be that simple. Everything about McIlroy's layup from the middle of the fairway on number 13, the par 5, before hitting an inexplicably poor chip into the creek was stunning and perhaps indicative of why he had never won this tournament before. It was a disaster reminiscent of what happened on Thursday when McIlroy chipped from behind the lightning-quick number 15 green into the water, ruining a round that was headed towards greatness. I truly believe I'm a better player now than I was 10 years ago, he said. Just, it's so hard to stay patient, so hard to keep coming back every year and trying your best and not being able to get it done. And there were points on the back nine today I thought, have I let this slip again? Unquote. It was not only McIlroy's fourth double bogey of the week, it changed the tournament. Rose, surging across the final holes, was suddenly tied and then briefly took the lead. Ludvig Åberg gave himself a chance down the stretch, but the Masters was still going to come down to one thing. Would McIlroy rise to meet history, or would the occasion swallow him? In the end, it was a little bit of both. A brilliant 7-iron drawn over the pond on number 15, giving him a 5-foot-7-inch look at eagle that ultimately became a 2-putt birdie. A makeable putt that grazed the edge and didn't drop at hole number 16. A clutch birdie at hole number 17 that gave him a 1-shot lead again. Lining up a 4-footer to win on hole number 18, only to miss it meekly off the left edge. Then coming back minutes later for a playoff on the very same hole and funneling a wedge back off the shelf to within a couple feet and finally a green jacket. It was all relief, he said. I've been coming here 17 years and it was a good decade plus of emotion that came out, unquote. And with that, the most draining chapter of a fascinating career closed under the Georgia dusk, and we didn't have to guess what it meant. McIlroy spent years telling us and an all-time Masters Sunday showing us. History will make it look more predictable than it was because the details usually get lost to time. McIlroy wrote the best ending possible to his Grand Slam story, but until the final putt dropped, none of us, even him, could be sure that it would ever happen. And again, that feature is entitled Rory McIlroy Wins the Masters and Career Grand Slam in the Most McIlroy of Ways, Dramatically, written by Dan Wolkin of USA Today. And from golf news, let's turn to some NFL news. The next headline reads, Travis Hunter raises rare risk-reward scenario for NFL teams preparing for the draft. Doubling his number of snaps doubles his risk exposure as well as his potential for big plays. And this feature written by Brent Schrotenbauer of USA Today. Any NFL team that picks Travis Hunter in the NFL draft this month will have an unusual puzzle to solve right away. What exactly do you do with him? Do you seriously consider letting him play almost every single snap on both offense and defense? That's what he wants, and that's what he did in college at Colorado. But this is the NFL, where old norms die hard and unnecessary risks are mostly avoided. Is an NFL team really going to increase the injury risk on its $40 million investment by letting him play that many plays and do what other NFL players almost never do? That's my fear, that they don't know what to do with him in the National Football League, former NFL quarterback Cordell Stewart told USA Today Sports. You saw what I went through, unquote. Hunter, a cornerback slash receiver, is expected to be a top five draft pick on April 24th. All teams with top five picks have said that they were open about Hunter's propositions to some extent, even if they were not fully convinced. The bigger question is whether the potential payoff is worth the risk, and if Hunter is the very rare player who can shatter old notions about what is possible. Here's why teams might resist his request, and what teams have said so far, and why Hunter might even get his wish. Asked recently how many snaps he wants to play in the NFL, Hunter replied, "All of them if they give me a chance." That is not done in the NFL, though. It wasn't done in college either until Colorado coach Deion Sanders had the vision to turn Hunter loose. Most coaches in college football won't allow it because they cannot fathom it, Sanders said in December. The more traditional NFL will be an even harder sell for Hunter. In the mid-20th century, Philadelphia Eagles center/linebacker Chuck Bednarik played both ways on a full-time basis and even played every play in the 1960 NFC Championship game. But since then, full-time two-way players have been practically extinct, other than an occasional part-time dalliance with playing both ways. It is rare for a reason. NFL teams can't afford to pay players to focus on only one side of the ball. A compelling case needs to be made for why there should be an exception. It's the best of the best, and you're saying you're the best at two positions? Asked former Buffalo Bills general manager Doug Whaley. Letting a player play both sides also invites unnecessary fatigue for the player, and worse. Doubling the number of snaps doubles the exposure of injury, said Richard Giller, a renowned sports insurance recovery attorney. It's a pretty straightforward thing. The issue then becomes, how do you protect that investment? Unquote. Giller recommends that the team that drafts him purchase a temporary total disability insurance policy to cover itself in the case of injury. That itself will require a unique risk calculus, since Hunter's proposition is so unusual. At Colorado last season, he led major college football with 1,483 plays, 714 on offense, 748 on defense, and 21 on special teams, plus 65 more that were called back due to penalty, according to Colorado University. Since then, he's been preparing for the draft and soon will join a team to prepare for a 17-game regular season in the NFL. That's not much of a break for a high-mileage player who measures at 6 feet even, 188 pounds. At that rate, how long can this guy last? Asked Whaley, who recently has worked in player personnel with the United Football League. But what if Hunter really is the best cornerback on your team and one of your top wide receivers? And what if his two-way play might combine with his big smile to make him the kind of beloved generational superstar that some NFL cities haven't seen in decades, if ever? Cordell Stewart, a former Colorado quarterback, has seen this sort of thing before. After he was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers in 1995, he didn't fit the traditional NFL mold of what a quarterback usually looked like back then, a white drop-back passer. So they moved him around, putting him at quarterback, receiver, running back, and even a little bit as punter. Unlike Hunter, Stewart didn't play defense and at least could take a break when the offense was off the field. At the same time, he helped the NFL see what was not just possible, but also beneficial. He was ahead of his time as a black NFL quarterback with mobility, now a common sight. Quote, "It was no way possible I could catch the ball that good and play quarterback," Stewart said of the NFL thinking back then. Stewart related that experience to Hunter's future in a conversation with USA Today Sports in December, shortly before Hunter won the Heisman Trophy. "There is no other player like him," Stewart said. "There isn't. I don't care. Just leave him alone. Bring him in and play him. Figure it out," unquote. Stewart estimated Hunter is better than the second and third receivers of most NFL teams and better than the majority of the league's quote-unquote lockdown cornerbacks. When you look at the game and how traditional it is in the sense of how coaches coach, I hope he finds a coach that's as transparent as possible to say, "We're going to use this talent on our football field to help us win," unquote, Stewart said. Deion Sanders saw that potential after playing both ways himself in the NFL to a smaller extent. He allowed him to be Travis Hunter, Stewart said. And then Hunter became the most decorated player in college football history for a single season, with 8 major college football awards, according to Colorado University. Before the NFL draft, teams generally are not inclined to share their true feelings about a prospect. Some still gave a glimpse of what they thought about Hunter's wishes. Jacksonville Jaguars head coach Liam Cohen recently told Action Sports that the team that picks Hunter seems to be quote-unquote fluid, and explained why it would take a small village of sorts to fulfill Hunter's wish. Patience among coaches also could be necessary if tensions rise over Hunter's services. Quote, "That has to be an organizational buy-in from the coaches, the strength staff, the athletic training, and sports performance," Cohen said. "Everybody has to be involved, as well as the coaches, in having patience with each side of the ball, because you really don't want to kind of put him in a box," unquote. The Jaguars have the number 5 pick behind the Tennessee Titans at number 1, Cleveland Browns at number 2, New York Giants at number 3, and New England Patriots at number 4. Patriots coach Mike Vrabel seemed to tap the brakes on the idea recently. Quote, "We've never seen a player, you know, necessarily do it," Vrabel told reporters. "I think there are some things that he can improve on by probably concentrating just on one position, but never going to put any restrictions on Travis or any player," unquote. Some teams also want him to concentrate on one side of the ball at first, but differ on which. Titans head coach Brian Callahan said that it's very realistic that Hunter could play both ways, but said that they would start him at cornerback before working him at times at receiver. By contrast, the Cleveland Browns see him primarily as a receiver at first, but acknowledge that Hunter is a quote-unquote unicorn who could do both at a high level, according to general manager Andrew Berry. "In terms of Travis Hunter, cornerback or receiver, the answer is yes," Berry said at the NFL scouting combine this year. And how does Travis Hunter see it? "Even if Hunter plays both ways on a regular basis, it won't open the floodgates for players to do what he does. There's not enough people that have that ability," Whaley said. As Sanders has said of Hunter, "He is him. And this is a unicorn moment. Will an NFL team properly take advantage of it?" Sanders and Bo Jackson are sports icons because they played pro football and baseball at the highest level. Hunter could reach the same status in an NFL city if he plays both ways in the highest level of football. He's been wanting this for a long time and has expected some pushback from NFL teams. Quote, "Yeah, because it's never been done, so I understand that," Hunter told reporters late last year. "They don't want me to be a high risk, you know. If I go to top pick, they don't want their top pick to go down too early," unquote. He's not thinking about risk, though. He's thinking about reward. "I believe I can do it," he said. "Nobody has stopped me from doing it this far," unquote. More recently, he was asked how he wants NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell to announce his job title when he's drafted, wide receiver or defensive back. Quote, "He better say wide receiver and DB," unquote, Hunter said. And again, that feature is entitled Travis Hunter Raises Rare Risk-Reward Scenario for NFL Teams Preparing for the Draft, written by Brent Scrotenbor of USA Today. And in NBA news, headline reads, Phoenix Suns fire Mike Budenholzer after just one season. This feature written by Jeff Zilgit of USA Today. The Phoenix Suns are headed for the fourth coach in as many seasons under owner Matt Ishbia. The Suns on Monday dismissed head coach Mike Budenholzer after just one season. Budenholzer was Phoenix's third coach in as many seasons. They fired Monty Williams after the 2022-23 season and Frank Vogel after the 2023-24 seasons. And he was expected to take a roster featuring Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal and make the Suns a competitor in the Western Conference. But that didn't happen. The Suns, who had the highest payroll in the NBA this season, finished with 36 wins, 46 losses, and missed the playoffs, the play-in game format included. They lost 9 of their final 10 games, including 8 consecutive when they were in the playoff hunt with 2 weeks remaining in the regular season. That might not be the only major change for the Suns. General manager James Jones has been with the team since 2017, but was not Ishbia's hire, and it is expected that Durant seeks a new team, though he has one season at $54 million remaining on his contract. Budenholzer, who was born and grew up in Arizona and was a Suns fan growing up, is a 2-time NBA Coach of the Year, winning the award in 2019 with Milwaukee and in 2015 with Atlanta. But he couldn't find answers with the Suns. He led the Bucks to a title in the year 2021. However, Budenholzer's demanding style can be difficult to play for. He had a shelf life that expired with both Atlanta and Milwaukee, despite success with both teams. Durant, Booker, and Beal played in just 37 games together, going 19 wins and 18 losses, and Phoenix was one of the worst defensive teams in the league, ranking number 27 and allowing 118 points per 100 possessions. Ishbia wants a contender, but the constant change in coaching staffs and a poorly constructed roster have not resulted in success. And again, that feature entitled The Phoenix Suns Fire Mike Budenholzer After Just One Season, written by Jeff Zilgit of USA Today. And from basketball news, let's turn now to some baseball news, starting with the American League and the Athletics. The Athletics were outscored 35-9 by the Chicago Cubs in three games last week at Sutter Health Park, allowing eight home runs. The longtime home of the San Francisco Giants AAA franchise features a much better hitting environment than the Coliseum in Oakland, an adjustment that the Athletics pitching staff has had to make sooner instead of later. First time playing here, a lot of home runs, Athletics starting pitcher Jeffrey Springs said. Quote, if you can get the ball in the air, it seems like it's going to go. You've got to pitch no matter what the conditions are or where we're at, unquote. The Athletics offense enjoyed the weekend in Denver, where it took two out of three games from Colorado and blasted five homers while averaging six runs per game. Lawrence Butler and Tyler Sodstrom each belted long balls during a 12-5 loss on Sunday. We like our offense, said designated hitter Brent Rooker, who cracked a career-high 39 homers last year and already has four in 2025. I think we're just going to continue to get better, unquote. And from the Athletics, let's go to Baltimore and the Orioles. Ryan Mountcastle had three of Baltimore's five hits in a 4-1 loss to the Royals. George Mateo started in center field for the first time in nearly a year, and his misplay of a ball hit by Bobby Witt Jr. that wound up as a triple triggered the Royals' three-run first inning. Boston used a different batting order in each of its first 10 games, in part because shortstop Gunnar Henderson missed the first seven, and outfielder Colton Cowser has missed the past six games due to injuries. Usually it's depending on the starting pitcher and kind of where we're at, Baltimore manager Brandon Hyde said. But probably settle in a little bit more now that Gunner's here, unquote. From Baltimore, let's now look at Boston and the Boston Red Sox. After recording a walk-off and an 18-run outburst in last week's doubleheader to finish a three-game sweep of the St. Louis Cardinals, Boston has won five games in a row entering the week. The Red Sox had hit .336 in their last six games after a 194 start. Leading a 22-hit outburst in Sunday's 18-7 nightcap victory, Alex Bregman and Rafael Devers both had four hits, and Willier Abreu continued his torrid streak with two hits, including one of the team's nine doubles. Abreu had the walk-off RBI, and Devers also hit his first home run of the season in a 5-4 10-inning win earlier in the day. Devers is on a five-game hitting streak and was 10-for-19 since starting 0-for-19. We know that he started the year slow, but we know that he's going to have a monster year, as he always does, Abreu said of Devers. So we were very happy for him when he got the first hit on Sunday, unquote. In an informal survey of baseball executives and agents, Red Sox pitcher Garrett Crochet received the best extension for a player, 5 years, $170 million, despite having only one full season as a starter. And from Red Sox news, let's turn to some White Sox news. Chicago. The Chicago White Sox, despite all the rumors and speculation are not being sold. White Sox owner Jerry Reinsdorf, now age 90, has made it perfectly clear to friends that he has zero interest in selling as long as he remains in good health. He has rebuffed all of minority investor Justin Ishbia's requests to purchase controlling interest of the team. And from Chicago, let's go to Cleveland and the Guardians. The Guardians opened the season with a 9-game road trip that ended with a 3-win, 6-loss record. "We are pumped to get home," Cleveland manager Stephen Voit said. "We know that we're going to get better than this offensively, and we know we're going to be better than this defensively. We know we're going to pitch better, so I've got the utmost confidence in our guys," unquote. The Guardians combined to go 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position the past two games entering the week, a 10-4 loss to the Los Angeles Angels and a 6-2 loss in the series rubber game. "We have these opportunities to score and we're just not getting it done," Voit said. "It's still early. I like where our guys are at. We're having good at-bats. I just think that we need to turn it up a little bit. We need to get some stuff going our way, and when we do get those guys on, keep the line moving," unquote. And from Cleveland, let's look at Detroit and the Tigers. Sam Mensen, a Tigers assistant general manager, resigned last week before the team planned to terminate him for inappropriate behavior. Two former Tigers employees said that Mensen sent them unsolicited lewd photos, according to a report published last Monday in The Atlantic. Upon being made aware of the allegations as to Tom Mensen's conduct, the club promptly completed an investigation, unquote, the Tigers said in a statement given to the Detroit Free Press, part of USA Today Network. Quote, "Before the club could terminate Mr. Mensen, he resigned," unquote. The Tigers have caught fire after going 0-3 against the Dodgers. They completed a 3-game sweep of the White Sox, posting 3 ninth-inning runs for a 4-3 victory. "It's not always perfect. It wasn't a great start to this game," manager A.J. Hinch said, "but they stayed in the competition and found a way. This team is built the right way," unquote. And from Detroit Tigers news, let's look at Houston and the Astros. The Astros had lost 4 out of 5 before scoring 8 unanswered runs for a 9-7 victory in 10 innings last week at Minnesota. Yordan Alvarez hit a 2-run homer in the 9th inning to tie the score. And in the 10th, Jose Altuve singled home ghost runner Brendan Rodgers, and Jake Myers raced home as part of a double steal. "That was a team win," Astros manager Joe Espada said. "We got contributions from a lot of players, and our bullpen did a nice job keeping us in there. Some small ball and bunting guys over, stealing home, trying to find a way to win a game, and we did," unquote. And from Houston Astros news, let's go to Kansas City and some Royals news. Infielder Michael Garcia went 0-for-4 on April 5th, marking the first game he started this year that he didn't collect at least one hit. But still, his start to the season has been encouraging. "We're seeing that he can hit the ball hard," manager Matt Cotrero said. "He's gaining in strength and in confidence at the plate," unquote. Garcia had 2 hits the next day to raise his batting average to .345. From Kansas City, let's go out to Los Angeles and the Angels. Remember when Angels manager Ron Washington banned cell phones in their clubhouse during spring training? Well, they're back. I put it in. They police it, Washington told the Orange County Register. If I walk through that clubhouse and I see it's out of control, I'll bring it up again, unquote. And from Los Angeles, let's go to Minnesota, where the Twins squandered a 7-1 lead heading into the fifth inning against the visiting Houston Astros and fell 9-7 in 10 innings in the rubber game of the three-game series. Some losses are different than other losses, Twins manager Rocco Baldelli said. This is going to be a tough one that's going to bother a lot of people in our clubhouse. There's no doubt about it. And I can't think that we're wrong for thinking that. It's a game that we should win, a game that we need to win, unquote. The Twins, who were asking interested parties to submit their bids by April 1st, now are telling prospective owners that they have another 45 days as they continue to seek $1.7 billion. And from Minnesota news, let's go to New York and the Yankee news. It's almost eerie how close Aaron Judge's stats in his first 1,000 games is to Babe Ruth's first 1,000 games with the Yankees. Ruth, with 321 home runs in 4,455 plate appearances, one homer every 13.88 plate appearances. Judge, 321 home runs in 4,355 plate appearances, one homer every 13.57 plate appearances. Ruth was 32 years, 113 days old at the time of his 1,000th Yankee game. Judge was 32 years, 343 days old. Just how surreal had Judge been in his last 162 games entering last Saturday? Batting average, .328. On base percentage, .460. Slugging percentage, .731. Home runs, .64. RBIs, .161. Runs, .133. Walks, .134. And he comes at just half the price of Juan Soto with his 9-year, $360 million contract. While the Yankees were striking out 13 times against the Diamondbacks ace Zach Gallen last week, the front office was drooling. Gallen will be a free agent after the season and loves life back east growing up in the Philadelphia area. From New York, let's go to Seattle. Not only were the Seattle Mariners swept in a three-game series in San Francisco, but right fielder Victor Robles, their leadoff hitter, suffered an injury to his left arm and could miss some playing time. Robles was injured while making a spectacular leaping catch in the right field corner with the score tied in the bottom of the ninth inning, launching himself into the protective netting to make the play. It's something with his shoulder, and we'll find out more here as we go, Mariners manager Dan Wilson said. Robles has been one of the few bright spots for a Mariners offense that was tied for 25th among 30 major league teams with 32 runs through the first 10 games. Robles went 2-for-5 Sunday to raise his average to .273. The Mariners were batting .213 as a team and sparked a rally in the top of the ninth with a one-out single. After advancing on a ground out, he stole third and scored the tying run on Randy Arozarena's two-out double. He is such a force, Wilson said. Big hits. The great defense that he plays. And then causing a lot of havoc on the bases and doing what he does out there. He's a great guy to have at the top of your lineup, unquote. Wilson said that Robles was taken to the Giants' medical room and was undergoing further testing. The Mariners were off to their worst 10-game start since the 2017 season. We've got a long way to go, Wilson said. It's just time to regroup, unquote. And from Seattle Mariners news, let's turn to some Tampa Bay news. Brandon Lowe, age 30, climbed the Tampa Bay Rays all-time list with a home run on April 6th against Texas, passing Aubrey Huff for third in franchise history with 129 career homers. It's cool. We pass some really big-name guys and some people that have played for a really long time, Lowe said. It's a really awesome thing to be on that list in general, but there's still quite a bit of work to do, unquote. He trails Evan Longoria, who has 261 career homers, and Carlos Peña with 163 homers in his Tampa Bay career. From Tampa Bay, now let's go to Texas and the Rangers. Texas finished a three-game sweep at home against Tampa Bay with a 4-3 victory thanks to Jonah Heim's two-out RBI single in the bottom of the ninth that scored Josh Smith. Heim also collected one of the Rangers' four stolen bases, giving them 14 in as many tries this season. Texas, which had won five straight games entering the week, had swiped at least three bases in three straight games, tying the longest streak in franchise history, and got four in a game for the first time since the 2024 season. Any time you can steal 90 feet is going to be huge, Helms said. We've been doing a tremendous job on the base paths early in the year. That's been a big emphasis coming into the year, just taking the extra 90 feet and putting pressure on defenses. If we can do that, we're going to be pretty good, unquote. And from Texas, we go to Toronto, where a Blue Jays turnaround will have to start at the plate. Two of just four Toronto hits last week, all but one a single, belonged to Alejandro Kirk. As manager John Schneider sees it, the Blue Jays cannot sit around and wait for the long ball, of which they've had just five all season. Andrés Giménez has three of them. I think the at-bats are good. We're doing a good job against starting pitchers, Schneider said. Until the home runs come, you've got to get the big hit. Whether that's with two outs, one out, whatever it is, those will come. Those will definitely come, unquote. And from there, let's turn to the National League notes. Starting with Arizona and second baseman Ketel Marte, who received the third extension of his career since being traded to the Diamondbacks, bringing in $64 million in new money. Yet, not only is he deferring $46 million, but he has agreed to take a substantial pay cut this season. He was scheduled to earn $19 million this year in his original contract, but has agreed to take a pay cut to $14 million while also deferring $5 million. It provides the D-backs $10 million in flexible spending after being stuck with starting pitcher Jordan Montgomery's entire $22.5 million this season. Marte was dealing with a hamstring injury that could cause him to miss weeks, according to the Arizona Republic. The Diamondbacks will face the Padres in a two-game series next year in Mexico City. And the Diamondbacks would love to have starting pitcher Zach Gallen back after this season when he's a free agent, but it is unrealistic to believe that they can afford two $200 million pitchers on their staff, with outfielder Corbin Burns signing a six-year $210 million contract last winter. And from Arizona, let's look at Atlanta now. The Braves, who spent most of their money on outfielder Jerkinson Profar this winter with a three-year, $42 million contract, now have to wonder if they were scammed. Profar was popped for using PEDs, drawing an 80-game suspension while being banned from the playoffs. The question now is, how will he look when he returns? He hit 280 with a career-high 24 homers and an 839 OPS last season with the Padres, but was it simply a byproduct of the PEDs? From Atlanta News, now let's go to Chicago and the Cubs. While all of the attention for Japanese pitchers has been on Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Roki Sasaki of the Dodgers, let alone Shohei Ohtani, Cubs starter Shota Imanaga continues to pitch better than all of them. Imanaga was 2 wins, no losses, with a 0.98 ERA in his first three starts this season after going 4-0 with a 0.98 ERA through April last season. When Cubs manager Craig Counsell was asked if he was surprised that it took this long to manufacture quote-unquote torpedo bats, Counsell said, "I'm curious how it took you guys so long to figure out we were using it," unquote. From Chicago News, let's go to Cincinnati and the Reds. Catcher Tyler Stevenson was revved up after the results of an MRI last Monday, Reds manager Terry Francona said. Stevenson could continue to the next phase of his recovery from the oblique injury that sidelined him since spring training. Next up, baseball activities. Stevenson has proven durable and productive with the Reds. He has averaged 140 games over the last two seasons and drove in 56 and 66 runs in 2023 and 2024, respectively. In Francona's last season in Cleveland, the Guardians lost 3 1-0 games all year. In Francona's first week in Cincinnati, the Reds lost 3 1-0 games in a row, going 34 innings without scoring, their longest drought since the 1946 season. From Cincinnati News, let's go to Colorado Rockies news. The Rockies turned a triple play last Saturday against the Athletics. In the top of the second inning of the home contest, the road team got runners on first and second with nobody out. Rockies pitcher Herman Marquez delivered to Jacob Wilson, who grounded to third baseman Ryan McMahon. He quickly stepped on third base before delivering it to Kyle Farmer at second base to get the second out, and Farmer's relay to Michael Toglia at first base completed the triple play. It had been nearly a decade since Colorado last completed a triple play, last doing so on September 1st, 2015. And from Colorado, now let's go out to Los Angeles and the Dodgers. Left-hand pitcher Blake Snell was placed on the 15-day injured list, retroactive on April the 3rd, with left shoulder inflammation. A two-time Cy Young Award winner, Snell signed a five-year, $182 million contract with the Dodgers in November. Snell, now age 32, is 1 win, no losses, with a 2.00 ERA and 4 strikeouts in 2 starts this season. A first-round draft pick by Tampa Bay in 2011, Snell has a 77-win, 58-loss career record with a 3.38 ERA in 213 big league starts. And from Los Angeles, let's go to Pittsburgh and the Pirates. The Pirates have issued an apology to the family of Roberto Clemente after the team replaced a tribute to the late Hall of Famer on the right field wall at PNC Park with an ad for an alcoholic beverage. Quote, "When we added the advertisement to the pad, it was an oversight not to keep the number 21 logo," unquote, Pirates President Travis Williams said last Sunday in a statement. "This is ultimately on me, not anyone else in the organization. It was an honest mistake," unquote. The criticism was ignited Saturday when photos of the new ad for Surfside cocktails began popping up on social media. Clemente's son, Roberto Jr., expressed concern that no one from the Pirates organization had informed the family of the impending change. In a statement posted to social media last Sunday, Clemente criticized what he called, quote, "a lack of meaningful collaboration between the organization and the family on matters that are deeply personal and historically significant to us and the fans," unquote. The team statement said there was no intent to diminish Clemente's legacy and that the space had been used for ads previously. The Clemente logo was placed on the right field wall in 2022 when the team didn't have a sponsorship for it coming out of the COVID pandemic. The number 21 logo will be returning to the right field wall, the team said. And Pittsburgh Pirates owner Bob Nutting was greeted by fans chanting, quote, "Sell the team," unquote, on opening day at gorgeous PNC Park. That's all the time that we have for this edition of Sports Today. My name is Bill, volunteer reader here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Have a great evening. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info. And you could hear Sun Sounds on your smart home device.